Fantasy freaks and geeks, what is up? This is not James Coe, but the whiz kid from Wisconsin running the show. James Coe, Marcus Grant, and Michael Fabiano all had to big time us with some TV duties this morning. So that means as we're closing out 2015, we're operating on a skeleton crew, but it also means we get to welcome Matt Harmon, not from West Virginia, and Matt, the franchise Franciscovich, into the podcast studio. How's it going, guys?
It's going great.
What's up?
It's like the... I don't even know. It's like, are we the B crew now?
We're the A team, bro.
A team.
Yeah, we're the A team.
I mean, people joked about me getting the Geno Smith treatment on Fabs when he was sick for Fantasy Live. So maybe you guys are doing that on the podcast now. Maybe this is the beginning of something new and different and exciting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Once everybody realizes this is the best podcast ever recorded for Fantasy. I'm sure that we'll take over.
Yes, it'll only be.
I agree.
Only be a matter of time until the Shadowy League figures are coming down and telling us that we, the three of us, have our own podcast instead. But no, we will miss those guys. We'll try to carry on in their stead. But we have a pretty big show today, as always. Even though it's Week 17, which you shouldn't be playing fantasy in unless it's DFS. But we'll get to that later. We'll recap the Monday night game first off. We'll get to a few top headlines. There's not as much going on in the fantasy world that we need to talk about. We'll hit a few waiver wire options. Talk some matchups. And then lastly, since it's kind of, the year's ending Friday night, basically, with New Year's Eve, or Thursday night, I don't know what day it is anymore, we're going to look back on 2015 and talk about what we learned from what was a wild and sort of unconventional fantasy season and spin a little bit of that into 2016 and what we can expect heading into drafts there. But first, as I mentioned, we had the Monday night game. Bengals at Broncos. Harmon, you covered it. Jeremy Hill... Gio Bernard didn't do a lot on the ground, but A.J. McCarron kind of got enough going through the air for the Bengals to be competitive. He hit A.J. Green on a touchdown. And on the flip side, our boy C.J. Anderson got it done for the Broncos. Ronnie Hillman did not, and the pass catchers did okay. But what were your takeaways from this game?
Yeah, well, first off, with the Bengals' backfield, I joked in the recap that I think the Bengals believe just because the weather's cold outside, they need to establish Jeremy Hill.
He had 19 carries to Gio's 8.
Yeah, and Hill was just bad, and he's been pretty bad all year. And I know that's kind of a crass way of putting it, but it is what it is. He's just not – he's not aggressive. He's not hitting holes well. And you could see that last night. And it just made more sense to get Gio Bernard more involved because that's how people have beat the Broncos defense in the past. You think about Charkhandrick West, how he beat them out of the backfield. Same with D'Angelo Williams, who's more of like a elusive back like Gio Bernard is. I was surprised they didn't go with more Gio, but I think that's just the way they see things right now is that, you know, they want to keep kind of like a steady grinding offense with McCarron back there. So it was a pretty inefficient day from Hill all around. And I said, too, in the recap that something's going to have to change with that backfield in order for either of these guys to recoup value next season. So those two are going to be interesting next year.
Yeah.
The passing offense was pretty stripped down, too, with McCarron back there. He started off pretty hot, but could not sustain that. It's kind of that's kind of the book on him coming out of school was like if the game's on script, if there's a good running game, he can make throws, but –
Right.
When you push him outside of structure, it was just – it got bad.
That first highly structured first drive, as we always know, yeah. Those games are those plays are pretty much designed coming into the game. He was excellent. He looked pretty good on his passes. He made a couple nice throws later, a couple bad throws, but as we were talking about the backfield, Jeremy Hill, 19 attempts, 63 yards. He had negative 2 yards on 2 carries. Gio Bernard on the flip side, 8 rushes for 14 yards, 4 catches for 29 yards out of the backfield. And then A.J. Green, as we mentioned, 5 for 57 with a touchdown. It was a pretty nice touchdown catch that he had.
Yeah, A.J. Green is super talented, as we all know. And I think there was a point like mid-season where we were talking about can you even use A.J. Green as an every-week starter? And he was not producing. He had a couple single-digit games in a row, and he finished the season strong and sort of capped it off last night with icing on the cake with a nice touchdown.
Yeah, that's for sure. So how do we assess A.J. Green moving into next year? He had 5 touchdowns in the last 5 games, 4 double-digit fantasy points. He had the one catch, 37-yard outing in A.J. McCarron's first game. But what do you guys think for A.J. Green moving into next year? Back in the wide receiver one good graces, more in the wide receiver two area?
It's tough to say because he did finish the season strong, but it's also probably not a coincidence that Eifert wasn't in the picture for a few of those games, including last night and the week before that.
True.
So that's been the trouble with Green all along this year was that you know, Andy Dalton made a lot of – I've said this a lot this year, but Andy Dalton's made a lot of improvements, but he's still not the type of, like, 2013 Peyton Manning where he can make, like, four or five guys fantasy relevant on a weekly basis. And they have so many talented pass catchers there because Marvin Jones – I think Marvin Jones actually might be a free agent. So whether he – I'm pretty sure that's
true. I'll check that right now.
Whether he re-signs or not, if he is indeed a free agent, that's going to change things as well because it's just – there's – you know, there's Jones, there's Eifert, there's Green, and all those guys are talented and they need targets. But, and then they also feed Gio Bernard out of the backfield. So it's almost like there's just too many talented guys on this Bengals offense for Green to be like 170, 180 target player in a season. But
Jones is a free agent for the record. So it'll be interesting to see if Dalton comes back having these improvements, though, if he can take an even another step. But you're right. I think I'd feel better about A.J. Green more in that wide receiver two range.
Yeah.
Next year, and we'll get into how the next year's draft is probably going to shape up a little more with what we've seen. But on the flip side, the Broncos, Brock Lobster, Bosweiler, whatever you want to call him, he did all right. Again, he came up when they needed him, kept some drives alive, made some nice passes, hit his main targets, and Owen Daniels a bunch. I think he had seven catches, actually, in this game. But what's our takeaway from this backfield, too, with C.J. Anderson, 9 rushes, 73 yards, a touchdown, looked far and away the more explosive, dynamic runner. Ronnie Hillman, on the other hand, 9 rushes, 35 yards. Did have 4 catches for 37 yards out of the backfield, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about the Broncos' backfield anymore. I mean, I'm, like, always ready to cape up for C.J. Anderson anytime he does anything.
You did just quite a bit on Twitter last night. Every time he touched the ball, you're like, oh, look, their best running back. Oh.
Yeah, of course I said, good things happening when – good things keep happening when they give the ball to their best running back, and then he got blindsided and fumbled on. I was like, oh, great.
Yeah.
But anyways, I mean, he's clearly the better runner. He's clearly more talented. He's so much more – adept in the passing game, even though Hillman had more catches last night. He's a better player in the passing game. He pass blocks better. He runs better. I mean, he does everything better than Hillman, but they want to have a committee. They have some kind of weird – and they've had this – the Broncos have had this all along with Ronnie Hillman, that they wanted him to be the guy originally. He fumbled his way out of the job. Then CJ came and took it when Ronnie got injured last year. I don't know. So I don't think that we can really expect that anything's going to change. In fact, I kind of would be a little surprised if they were both back there next year. But I don't really know what to tell people going forward for next year.
Franchise, any other thoughts on this confusing committee?
I like Hillman's talent. Like he had some good cuts and good juke moves where he was making guys miss, but he just couldn't get it. Like he wasn't running north-south, and that's what C.J. Anderson does.
Yeah.
But it's just – like, I don't know. I mean, this year, there's no way you could have trusted either of them. If you played Hillman, you hope for, I don't know, 10 touches and, like, 70 yards and maybe a touchdown. And Anderson was – I think he was injured most of the year, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the big problem with Anderson is that he can't – he just seems like he can't stay healthy. It's just been one injury after another.
Yeah, so, like, this year, they haven't – you know, you can't trust them. And, I mean, maybe against San Diego, it'll be a different story. And maybe you start Anderson –
yeah, I guess I'd feel okay starting Anderson next week. Not so much about Hillman, but yeah, you're playing with fire because that backfield's going to be split.
Yeah.
But speaking of splits, the wide receivers, Demaryius Thomas had 7 catches for 59 yards, and Sanders had 4 for 67 with the touchdown. This is an offense where these two used to be able to just feast all the time with a better quarterback in there, but now they're not quite. Their ceiling has been lowered a lot with Brock Osweiler in there.
Yeah,
we don't quite see them racking up the catches and yards like they used to. How do we feel about these guys this coming week against San Diego? And I guess a little bit extrapolating moving forward if Brock Osweiler or somebody else is under center next year.
Yeah, I mean, since I'm not playing any fantasy outside of DFS in week 17, I don't really care how they do this week, you know, as far as that's concerned. But I am interested to see kind of another data point in how they play with Brock Osweiler, because over the last 4 games, Demaryius Thomas has basically been like a possession receiver, which we don't really think of him as, and then Sanders has been kind of the deep threat.
Yeah.
The last 4 games, Thomas averages 10.1 yards per catch, and Sanders averages 12.4 yards per catch. So Sanders has been going downfield, which has led to some big games and some kind of like feast or famine a little bit there.
Yep.
But then Thomas has had a few games where he's, you know, like last night he had 7 for 59.
Yeah.
And which is weird. They haven't really been using him on those like – screen passes either. I know he caught one screen pass last night and broke a bunch of tackles. It's like, oh, I remember when they used to do
that. Yeah, they used to do that all the time.
It used to be the play for him.
Yeah, so it's weird. I don't – and if Brock Osweiler is going to be the starter next year, which is no guarantee, it's – I don't really know what to – is this going to be how it is again? I don't know.
Yeah. Franchise, any other thoughts on these pass catchers?
I mean, I guess Manny Sanders has more upside, clearly. Like, that's the takeaway. Like, if you have Demaryius Thomas on your team and you need that home run this coming week, I would, you know, maybe bench him for someone else with more upside because you're going to get, I don't know, 60 yards.
Yeah.
Maybe in PPR you get, like, 12 points out of him, but you can't bank on the touchdowns like you used to be able to. What does he have this year, like 3 or 4 total touchdowns?
It's not great. He has 5, and Sanders has 6.
Sanders has played better this year, too. And you could make an argument that he played better last year, too.
Absolutely.
He's a way better route runner. He's a more complete receiver, where the thing with Thomas is, and I noted this a lot last offseason when I did his reception perception, was that, like, Thomas is really great at, like, 3 things. But he's not ever going to be the guy who's going to create a ton of separation with his route running. He can still get jammed. He's not great. This year he did improve with his contested catches, like playing balls in traffic, but there are still a lot of holes to his game. And, like, now that he doesn't have, like, an elite-level quarterback, you got to wonder if he's going to be as productive as he was in past years.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of my concerns with him. He doesn't do some of the other things that a lot of those elite wide receivers do. Like you said, the contested catches got better, but working the boundary, running all the routes, gaining that separation on deep things that aren't the more – he's so good after the catch, but, yeah, I have reservations about him moving forward. But any other final thoughts on this game before we move into a couple headlines?
I just want to say that, like, from start to finish, it felt like a playoff game, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a good game all around.
It was good.
Fun to watch.
The atmosphere in that stadium.
And especially, too, with 2, like, backup quarterbacks. That's always fun because you don't really know what you're going to get. And
they played well for the most part.
It's kind of funny. Like, ESPN got a raw deal with some rough Monday night games recently. And in this one, it originally probably like, oh, it's still they hit the playoff implications. But, like, yeah, Dalton and Manning, like, at the beginning of the season. Instead, it's McCarron and Osweiler. But they played a hell of a game. It was fun to watch.
It was a fun game.
All right, let's do some news.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
All right. Not a lot of news to report in the fantasy world right now. Not a ton of injuries that we're watching. And like we said, most of you should not be playing. Apologies if you still are and you're offended by that sentiment. But Beast Mode could return to practice this week for the Seattle Seahawks. Their running game has kind of fallen apart since they lost Thomas Rawls. It was reported that he could practice as of Wednesday. So, guys, if you were hypothetically still playing or in DFS and Beast Mode looks like he's going to get the start on Sunday against the Cardinals, how do you feel about it? Silence.
I mean, I guess it depends on where he comes in, like what his value is in DFS, but If he starts and you're trying to start him this week, you're banking on a touchdown because that's about all you can hope for.
I wouldn't touch him. I don't like to play players coming off an injury, especially a long injury absence in their first week back. That's generally a rule of thumb for me. It's not really like a great spot for him either. Maybe if this was a home game, I'd think about it more. But
on the road against an Arizona D that's playing out of its mind right now.
And quite frankly, I don't even think he's going to play. I mean, this would be 5.5 weeks he's missed. The original timetable was 6 weeks.
Right.
So I don't really think there's any reason for him to play. Can they even improve their playoff positioning if they
No, I don't think they can. So he might not play. One thing to think about, though, to be a good company man, is if your fantasy season is over and you still want to play, you can play Playoff Challenge on NFL.com. The Seahawks could be a good offense to kind of pick some players from because of all the wildcard teams, they're one of the ones that I think people would have the most confidence in advancing deep into the playoffs, maybe the Super Bowl. And if they got Beast Mode back in the playoffs, it'd be a good plus for that offense.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I agree with you, though, that as far as like wild card teams go, they would be the one that I would think would move along.
Unless franchises Steelers can eke back into the playoffs, but
they
have an uphill battle there. Yeah. All right, the other major news, well, not really major, but Clipboard Jesus, Charlie, a.k.a. Charlie Whitehurst, has been placed on IR, which means if you're still playing fantasy or we're looking at the Colts in DFS, there is a very good chance that Steven Morris, a second year, I believe, undrafted free agent, right?
Correct.
Could be starting under center.
Who?
Yes. Harmon, you were joking before the podcast. Do you have a deep analytical assessment of Steven Morris?
Well, Morris was he's at a University of Miami. He's actually like a pretty physically talented quarterback.
He's a big, kind of a big guy too, right?
He's a bigger guy. He's got a good arm. He just has like no sense of touch or accuracy. Like he was the type of guy like in college you would see him like cock back and throw a pass and you'd be like, "Wow, that looks good." And then he'd be like 15 yards past the wide receiver. So it's probably not going to be pretty. He's bounced around. I think he was originally with Jacksonville, then he got signed to Philadelphia. So no, I mean, I don't really think that there's a lot of reason to be excited.
As you said, if his passes are sailing 15 yards past guys, you probably want to look elsewhere than T.Y. Hilton or Dante Moncrief this week.
Yeah.
Hopefully you haven't really even been relying on those guys a lot lately. You're probably
right
in your Week 17 fantasy championship.
Yep, exactly. All right, and that was about it for the big news around the league. I think Dez Bryant might get shut down again, so if you're still playing and looking at him,
man.
I hope so too. So they're going to run, like, more tests on his foot and his knee. I'm like, what test?
What test?
Put him on the bench.
Yeah, you stink. You're not going to the playoffs. Just stop.
I think they rushed him back to begin with.
I think they did, too. Typical, like, Dallas hubris. I think they rushed him back because, like, oh, we got a shot to go to the playoffs. No, well, you guys lost, like.
You know, Dez is a crazy person. Like, when he broke his foot or whatever, he was running, like, half naked through the hallway with his teammates in that game. And the trainers are, like, corralling him. Like, no, Dez, come back. Please
stop.
Foot is broken.
You're going to shatter.
Sit down.
Yeah, just sit down, man. So I'm sure Dez had something to do with that as well.
Yeah.
All right, real quick, some waiver wire options. How do we feel about Cameron Artis Payne now that Fozzie Whitaker's got the high ankle sprain? I mean, you were the one that watched that game this week. Did he look okay? He only got, like, what, 9 touches?
Yeah, that was the weird part was that he looked pretty good, but they came out the first drive and gave Fozzie Whitaker the first 4 carries. Like, that first drive, it was pretty much all Fozzie. I think he caught a pass, too. So, it was like, oh, man, like, all the hope that Cameron Artis Payne was going to be, you know, the guy that didn't seem to be founded. But, yeah, I think Fozzie has, like, a high ankle sprain or something, but it looked ugly. He couldn't even, like, walk off.
They said it was a mild high ankle sprain for Fozzie Whitaker, which should lead to some more touches for Cameron Artis Payne.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, last game, that was part of the reason why I think they lost was that they didn't even, like, really try to establish the run. And they kept, like, Atlanta kept sending waves and waves of pressure. Vic Beasley actually had a really good game, and he's had a disappointing rookie year as a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. But they never tried to, establish a solid running game. But so they might get back to that, you know, in their last game. And I think this is a home game, so it's definitely worth looking at.
Home against Tampa. All right.
Let's get real, guys. Cam Newton is the Panthers running.
He is.
Kind of is.
He's not, like, and that's the thing. He's not really even a quarterback.
Yeah.
Obviously he's a quarterback, but, like, he's not just a quarterback. He is, like, their offensive machine. He's, the engine that makes it all go, which is, you know, why I love Carson Palmer, and I wouldn't hate if they were co-MVPs, but Cam Newton has to be some sort of MVP because, like, he had 100 yards rushing against the Giants and 300-yard pass.
Jonathan Stewart has 989 yards rushing on the season. Cam Newton is 626.
It's insane.
And, like, Jonathan Stewart's been great, too. But, yeah, Cam's going crazy.
Yeah.
Franchise, 2 running backs from the game you watched last week could still be on the waiver wire. James White, Bilal Powell. Did Bilal Powell get nicked up in that game, or is he still all right?
I don't think he got nicked up.
But he was
Chris Ivory did a lot.
Yeah,
but
Powell was once again the more effective runner in that game, wasn't he?
He was, and he has been for like 4 or 5 weeks in a row now. And if you're a Chris Ivory owner, I am a Chris Ivory owner, and I had him in a championship game last week, and I benched him not for Powell, but it was because I knew that Powell was, you know, Powell's the guy now. And especially in games where the Jets might be down or it's close, Ivory's not going to get his 20 touches that he needs to produce fantasy points.
I know somebody that started Bilal Powell against you in a championship game.
That was you, wasn't it?
It was.
I actually was in one of those situations where I had Ivory and Powell, and I started Powell over Ivory.
Yeah.
Because I'd picked up Powell as a handcuff when Ivory was nicked up earlier in the year, and I was like, I feel better starting him. This week they play the Bills, which I'm having a tough time getting a beat on that game because the Bills have not looked great recently, but this is one of those stupid narrative Rex Ryan revenge games.
Oh, my God.
So
Bills lost. I think the Bills lost against the Jets earlier.
They did.
This season. So
no, the Bills beat the Jets.
Oh, no, they did.
Remember,
you're right.
Remember, because there's all those Rex Ryan gifs of him screaming a profanity and like gyrating all around. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think that was a bad game for Ryan Fitzpatrick, if I remember right.
It was. It was a Thursday night game, too.
Oh, it was Color Rush.
Yeah,
it was
Color Rush. They went
It was
in.
The one where people couldn't see it because the jerseys were all green and all red. The colorblind people couldn't tell which team was which.
Oh, yeah. But as far as Bilal Powell versus Chris Ivory in this game, I do think like pass catching running backs and like kind of slashing sort of running backs have been the guys to go with against the Bills. So you would think that is another Powell game.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Jets could blow the Bills out. The Bills are a really bad team, and they're kind of folding from the inside. But I do think it'll probably be competitive. Rex will get his guys up. You know, that's like you live by the Rex, you die by the Rex, and like this will be a live by the Rex game where they get all up for this one because they don't have anything else to play for. And
right.
All that.
Yeah. And again, you can check out all these guys at NFL.com/waivers. I ended up writing up 15 guys in total. Some wide receivers to look at. Marcus Wheaton, that Pittsburgh passing offense could rebound this week against the Browns. Not a bad look. Kamar Aiken, let's talk a little bit about him, guys. He's been playing some pretty darn good football the last couple weeks and is still owned. His ownership percentage has climbed, thankfully, because we've been writing about him for weeks over here. But he is still available in just shy of 77% of NFL.com leagues. So
yeah, I watched that Ravens Steelers game, unfortunately, on Sunday. But
sorry.
Kamar Aiken, you know, he led the wide receivers and targets with eight. He had eight catches for 66 yards, and that's around what he's been doing every week, even with Ryan Mallett under center, who looked like a competent NFL quarterback the other day. Which
as much as it pains you to say.
How is that possible?
But I think Kamar Aiken, especially in PPR leagues, like you can't bank on the touchdown, but he's going to get the volume and he's going to get you enough yards.
Right, he's got a real safe floor. He's somebody I know, Harmon, you mentioned it too, but I've been curious to watch him in the offseason more and like dive into that tape because I think he might be a sneaky guy for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy I really want to study this year or this offseason, and he's been impressive. Like, and they've asked a lot of him. I think this is probably like he's led the team in targets pretty much since Steve Smith went out. He's been kind of the guy they just funneled the offense through, and he's responded. I mean, he's had some solid games. I mean, he's not blowing up, of course, but it could, like we were talking about this in Slack chat yesterday, he pretty much could be, he might be the number two receiver to, and Breshad, well, he might be the number one, and Perryman might start opposite him, you know, their first round pick who didn't play at all this year.
Yeah.
So he's definitely a guy they want to be a part of the offense in the future. So
When Schaub was playing too, he had high praise for Aiken too. So
no, we remember your epic soliloquy
with the miracle, right? And actually, I wonder, what was your miracle? You wanted him to
it
be
was like
top
Kamar
10.
Aiken would be a top 10 fantasy wide receiver
the rest of the way,
4 weeks or something.
Well, I mean, he hasn't been terrible. He's in the top 25.
He had that big Hail Mary touchdown catch, which helped him out
right
a couple weeks ago, but.
Another guy that you want to look at, too, on waivers, in my opinion, if Cecil Short sits again, you got to play
Washington.
Nate Washington.
Yep, he was on my list.
Yeah, was he? Okay, that's good. I don't read the waiver column.
That's fine.
I'm just kidding.
Thanks,
but,
bro.
I'm just kidding. But, no, I mean, Washington averages double-digit targets when Shorts is out.
He's caught all of his touchdowns when Shorts
four,
is out of the lineup,
right?
Too. I think four now, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a guy that you want to look at for sure. The Texans' offense is clicking on
with
Brandon Whedon.
Who I put as kind of a YOLO streamer at the end of the article, too. I was like, why not? If you're playing in Week 17, I might make a DFS lineup with Brandon Whedon just for kids.
If you had a DFS lineup with that was somehow like a super value triple stack with Nuke,
Washington
Whedon. And Whedon, that was a pretty good one.
Did you call that a super stack?
A super stack.
Super stack or triple stack, you know, you can call it either.
And then Dontrell Inman, one more wide receiver to look for.
He's been 11 targets.
11 targets. He's an athletic guy. He's a dynamic playmaker. He can be, but that Chargers offense, they need to get the ball to somebody, and he's like the top pass catching option, not named Danny Woodhead or Antonio Gates now by default.
He's kind of like the Kamar Aiken of the Chargers.
Now, one more interesting setup here, and this is something we could spin into our matchups discussion for some DFS picks just Week 17 in general. Sam Bradford has actually been playing decently. He missed some big throws in that last game, but he's been playing better of late. And so has Zach Ertz. And this week, they're both lower owned in NFL.com leagues. And this week, they get to go up against the New York Giants, who, I tweeted this yesterday, if they allow 197 passing yards, they will set a new all-time record for the most passing yards allowed in a single 16-game season. Their secondary has not been great.
Yeah.
The Eagles' passing offense has been clicking. Jordan Matthews has been doing stuff, too. I kind of like both these guys this week in this matchup. What about you guys? Harmon, we'll jump to you first.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like the offense is kind of sort of finding its footing here towards the end of the year.
The passing offense, at
least.
Yeah.
The passing, well, yeah, the running offense is a complete a complete dumpster fire. That's what happens when you try to split your committee three ways. but anyways, sorry, personal pet peeve of mine. But
that's okay.
Sam Bradford has looked pretty good. Zach Ertz has led the team in targets, I think, pretty much the last 4 weeks.
He
got 17 last week, caught 12 passes. I think you can start him. The Giants have been pretty terrible against tight ends. I think they allow one of the highest touchdown rates, and I think they've allowed over 1,000 yards like 3 weeks ago to tight ends. So.
Yeah, let's take a look.
Definitely a team that you can exploit with that position.
Yeah.
And which makes sense because they're weak at safety, and they've always had kind of like a fetish for slow-footed linebackers that can't cover. along the same lines there, that I kind of like Jordan Matthews this week because their weakest corner is the slot corner. They had Trevin Wade was, I think, their slot corner, and he might still be playing in that position, but they've kind of cycled guys in and out where they're pretty strong on the outside. So I think that could mean Matthews gets open a lot. And again, he'll run some of his routes against those slow-footed linebackers and the safeties. So if you need – and he's had 100 yards back-to-back games.
Back-to-back games and touchdowns.
Yes, that is true.
Four touchdowns in the last five games.
And it's funny that we kind of like
– Jordan Matthews.
We're all pretty disappointed in Jordan Matthews – provided he at least has like a decent game this week, he's probably going to cross 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
I think Matthews could be like an interesting draft bargain next year, especially if like – I think Chip Kelly like just got kind of obsessed with pigeonholing Matthews in this role, like that's like big slot receiver role, and it was kind of hurt. It kind of hurt his stock for a while because he wasn't getting like any downfield targets, but he can at least make some plays downfield. And I think he's starting to catch on. And one thing about Matthews is like sometimes he plays a little passive, like he doesn't play up to his size. But one thing like I've noticed the last couple weeks watching them is like he's starting to like every time he makes a catch, he gets up and like gets into it. And you like to see that from a big guy, like being competitive like that. And you need to make more catches in traffic as a result.
It almost seemed like earlier in the year it got into his head. Like he had the drops and stuff that he wasn't playing as aggressively and attacking the ball and being as physical afterwards. Because he had the drops and like a couple fumbles, I think, in the first few weeks. So it has been good. And I think you're right. Like, next year, maybe look target Matthews in like those mid to late rounds like that, because his value is certainly going to be depressed in season-long drafts after people got burned taking him in, what, the fourth round this year or whatever, however highly he was drafted?
Yeah, pretty highly.
So you can keep an eye on him as he falls probably a couple rounds lower than that and maybe catch him ready for – because he's entering his, what, third year, right? And that used to be the old wide receiver breakout year, although guys have been on a quicker learning curve these days. But all right, we'll spiral that one into a matchups discussion. What else do we like this week? One I had circled, and this is kind of narrative, kind of not, but Julio Jones is 16 receptions shy of tying Marvin Harrison's record for a single season of 143. Something tells me that the Falcons are going to try and get him there. I mean, he already gets funneled targets like nobody's business in that offense, but he's also playing – oh, God, I already forgot who he's playing. It's the Saints, who do not have a great passing defense. What do you guys think about Julio this week and in DFS especially, where his value is probably going to be pretty high?
He's going to explode.
Harmon?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like that. If actually, all of Brown, Nuke, Julio, and I think Odell too, those guys all have good matchups.
They do.
So it's going to be tough decisions at the top there, but I like Julio a lot, and he'll definitely be super popular in DFS, though. I would guess, just shooting off the cuff here, that he probably ends up with the highest ownership percentage just because of
good chance, and he had a big game last week too.
A big game last week, and you know, everybody's talking about it because they beat the Panthers, and the matchup with the Saints will dictate that a lot of people go to him.
And speaking of Brown, the Steelers, the entire passing attack could hopefully have a bounce-back game against the Cleveland secondary that has not been great this year. Joe Hayden. Is Joe Hayden on IR now? Yeah, he's on IR.
He's been on
Their first-round pick, Justin Gilbert from last year. It's usually a healthy scratch. I don't think he's injured anymore.
He's so bad.
The secondary is kind of a mess right now. What do we think about the Steelers' passing attack? Is Martavis Bryant ever going to do anything again this year?
I don't know. They need to get him involved again to win, though, because they haven't. He hasn't been as involved the last couple weeks. And
has it looked like to you, franchise, that they've almost kind of had Martavis Bryant and Marcus Wheaton like switch roles, like in a way, like Wheaton's been running a lot of, like, downfield routes, and Martavis has had like, he's been almost used like a possession receiver, and they've used him on a lot of end-arounds.
Yeah, rushing stuff, like a gadget-type guy.
It seems odd to me. Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But, like, am I crazy thinking that, or what?
I don't want to say – I don't know.
I'm not saying that Wheaton's better than Bryant.
No. But, yeah, I mean, Wheaton's been getting more looks and been having better fantasy games the last month, 5 weeks than Bryant has. And there was a point in the, like, mid-season where it was just like – it was only a matter of time until Big Ben took – a deep shot to Bryant for like an 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah, they were taking those routinely.
Yeah, it was happening all the time, and I don't know. I haven't seen that happen in a couple weeks, and Bryant's fantasy numbers have suffered because of it. Of course, Antonio Brown is keeping up his pace of however 8 or 9 catches and 80, 90 yards a game. He had a kind of a down game last week, but so did everyone on the Steelers except D'Angelo Williams. But, I mean, I might start. If I had Wheaton and Bryant on my fantasy team, I might go with Wheaton over Bryant this week.
Oh my God, gross. That's crazy.
Yeah, this is. I'm just looking it up now. From Pro Football Focus Fantasy, Marcus Wheaton has a 15.1 average depth of target since week 13. Martavis Bryant 9.8.
Oh my God,
that's so weird.
Yeah, I don't
that's
know what
bizarre.
They're like moving away from what they've had success with.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah.
That's wow. And I would need to look at that more deeply and watch the tape, but that's insane.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes me sad about Martavis Bryant. Good thing I lost in the championship in the league I have him in. One of them. I did win in the other one.
The other thing in that game is D'Angelo Williams will be a beast.
Yes.
Yes.
As usual.
As
always.
Usual. Another matchup I had circled, Jets Bills. Mostly for the Jets because the Bills. Their running backs both had good games last week, but are running into a Jets front that has been playing outstanding football, which also makes me a little bit worried about Tyrod Taylor. Darrell Revis has been healthy, so he could lock down on Sammy Watkins, who I'd be interested, Harmon, while you're on that, what Sammy Watkins' average depth of target has been, at least for the last like 4 or 5 weeks or so. I mean, maybe in general. It feels like they're not using him on a lot of intermediate routes, and it's mostly just deep shots, which feels like a disservice, but anyways.
You would be correct. His average depth of target for the last 4 weeks is
20.9. Oh my God.
Wow.
It's very far down.
And he's had, how many targets has he had the last 4 weeks? He's had quite a few, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much been dominating the target share. Last week, or this past game, he had 35.3% of the targets, but it was only that was only 6 targets. They're kind of like
right.
The Chiefs passing offense. Jeremy Maclin's been the same way. He owns like a ridiculous share of the targets, but it's only a few of them. The difference is that Maclin is being used in those short to intermediate areas. Sammy's been basically just like almost like what you'd think of a Martavis Bryant, like a deep threat sort of guy.
Right. I mean, he had 10 and 12 in the 2 weeks before that, hauled in 5 catches in each game, and then had 4 against Houston, but had 3 for 109. So,
but to his credit, he's converting them. I mean, he only has a 54% catch rate because they're using him so far down the field, but he's caught 15 passes for 276 yards and 3 touchdowns in last 3 weeks.
He's done quite well, but it just feels weird. Like, why wouldn't you run him on some other routes?
Well, I mean, I think the one thing with him is, like, he shows, and I think this tricks people when you just sit down and watch. I'm gonna try not to rant on this, so please hit me if
I'll cut you off if it gets too long.
So I think when you just like sit down to watch tape and you like if you see flashes of something, you start to like you really your brain has like a visceral reaction and you overemphasize it and you like extrapolate it to be like this is what the player does. And that's the thing with Watkins, like he shows like literally elite route running potential, but he only shows it on like 5 to 6 routes a game.
Yeah.
So I think people think that he can run a whole route tree, but one thing that was definitely true last year, and even going back to his college tape at Clemson, was he just wasn't asked to do that all the time. So he's still learning, and I think that's probably part.
Yeah.
It's definitely like some of Rex Ryan, you know, Bill's offense.
Greg Roman, yeah.
Greg Roman, all that. But also I think some of it has to do with him too.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But so on the flip side, Decker, Marshall, great starts. We already talked about Bilal Powell. Talked about him a little bit. Fitzmagic too. I don't mind him this week.
No way. He's awesome.
He's been great.
Bill's defense has been a pretty big disappointment.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Any other matchups or things you guys wanted to talk about for this week? I did mention it might be worthwhile to follow the news surrounding the Patriots. They have the first round bye. I think they have the one seed locked up now too. I was messing around on the playoff predictor. I don't think there's any way they can lose it. I forget if I've seen that in print based on the Bengals losing on Monday night. So there is a chance with that team being so banged up that they might pull those guys out a little bit to save them up and get extra healthy. So could be something to watch there.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I would look for if you're playing in week, and I haven't really even begun research, but if you're playing in week 17, if you're playing DFS, look at some of these like bad teams going against each other. Like,
Saints Atlanta was kind of one I was circling there.
Saints,
we mentioned
Atlanta,
a little bit.
Jacksonville and Houston. I mean, Houston is going to the playoffs probably, but they still don't have it like locked up.
I think
they have to win, and Indy has to lose for them to get in.
No, there's wait, for Houston?
Yeah.
No, Houston's pretty much fine because they're
as
all
long
but
as they
in.
Win, right?
As long as they win for sure. But otherwise, like 10 things, like I think 9 things
right.
still have to happen for the Colts to make the playoffs. So.
Okay. Yeah. Right. I remember Dan Hansis posted that article
yeah.
yesterday. Okay. Yeah. So, but still, the Texans have to win. They have to at least, you know, try. And I think, and Jacksonville, you know, we know how they are. They're a good offense, a bad defense. So, games like that, I wouldn't probably say the same for St. Louis and San Francisco. That would be
I was just going to bring that game up. I was going to say, how about the Rams and the 49ers, guys? Huh?
Maybe some Gurley.
Probably Gurley.
Oh, definitely Gurley, yeah. But probably that was the Rams are also
– Tavon Austin week again?
It could be. He was quiet last week.
I mean, he's up and down.
So. I would only ever, like, play him at home.
Yeah.
I actually kind of want to look at his home road splits and see if there's anything to that because, you know, fast track dome.
Fast track, yeah, yeah, for sure. Other games, maybe Lions-Bears? I don't know what to make of that game. Because I don't know, like Calvin Johnson finally got back on track, but I was hearing rumors, I forget if it was on the ATN podcast, which you guys should also download from iTunes and Stitcher, or it was somewhere else, but because Calvin's got a massive cap number next year. So you wonder if they're going to, you know, ride him out here and feed him a bunch of targets or not to try and depress his numbers for negotiating tactics. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, I was talking about that in the opportunity report, too. Like, I wonder,
that might have been where I read it, too.
I wonder if he gets a bunch of targets just for the fact that maybe they want to showcase him in a trade.
That, too.
Which I don't know if teams actually really do that, if they actually put a lot of thought into that sort of stuff. But it would be kind of an interesting idea because, like you said, his cap number is massive. They're probably headed towards another rebuild. And I think that I would be kind of surprised. In my head, like a rational part of me thinks that he won't be back next year, but he's been a big player for them, so who knows?
I mean, he really is like the face of that franchise, though.
Yeah, but he's like, I hate to say this, but like he's definitely not.
He's not the same.
He's not the same.
He also hasn't been healthy.
Yeah,
he's been running on a bum ankle for weeks.
Yeah, and the thing with like older receivers, like if they can't become like slot receiver possession guys, like they fall off a cliff quick.
Yeah.
Brandon Marshall's kind of made that transition as he's aged, and he's only like I think
he's
he
only
and Calvin are about the same age though.
He should. I think he's 31. A little younger, maybe. By a year or so, but I'll look that up quick.
But yeah, like Calvin is still running all the same routes that he did when he was younger, but he can't like go up and get the football. He can't separate like he used to because of all the injuries too, like you mentioned. So
he disappeared like not this last week, but the 2 weeks
wow.
prior.
Wow, actually, Brandon Marshall is a year older than Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I figured Calvin's only like 30.
He's 30. He'll turn 31 next September.
Yeah, but when you start to lose some of those like physical like I always think of because I'm from DC. I always think about like Santana Moss and how he used to be like an elite like deep threat speed guy, but then like when he turned about 33. He turned into kind of like a Wes Welker, like slot receiver sort of thing, and it extended
did,
his career.
Yeah, he did well with that for a couple of years there.
So that's like the thing. If Calvin's going to be a good player going forward, he needs to kind of – he's just been so bad in that role. He needs to kind of transform his game a little.
Yeah. I'm sure he could, though, with his body and his skill set.
Yeah, he's still a huge red zone threat and – you know,
we've seen Larry Fitzgerald do very well in a role more like
Fitzgerald
that in Arizona
is
right now.
Great example.
True.
All right, so that's pretty good for the matchups. If you guys have more specific questions, again, you can find us on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB, at @MattFranchise, and at @AlexGelhar. We'll also post our weekly matchups column on Thursday, I believe. We'll try and get that out on New Year's Eve with probably a little bit more of an eye towards DFS than we usually do since, again, playing in Week 17 is crazy. All right. Now, as I said, New Year's Eve is Thursday night. The 2015 year is coming to a close, and for the most part, the fantasy season is done. And it has been a weird, weird season. Most of the first round draft picks were either huge busts, looking at you, Eddie Lacy, or suffered huge injuries. Lots of wide receivers changed. We had some breakouts. The quarterback landscape was a little different than we looked at. So basically, we're going to sit here and talk about for a few minutes to wrap up the pod before Daily Daps. Some of the things we learned, what we took away from this weird season, and how we're going to use that in our research, you know, going forward to plan and help all of you guys chase another title or come for your first title in 2016. So, Harmon, I know you had a rant you were thinking of, and Frances will give you a sec to think about what you want to talk about first. But, Harmon, why don't you take the floor with your running back rant that you were going on a little bit yesterday in our Slack client chat.
Yeah, I was homesick yesterday and was just assaulting you guys in Slack. Like, I just thought about this. Listen to me. But which is pretty much what I do all day on Twitter. So I think we like really obsess about matchups too much in fantasy football, and especially at the running back position. We definitely, you know, we start targeting these teams like the Chargers this year, the Browns this year were teams that we consistently targeted. However, sometimes I think if a running back has a bad matchup, we get too scared off, especially if it's, like, not an elite-level player. Like, if Adrian Peterson has a bad matchup, he's still playing. We get that. But, like, I think there are better indicators to running back success. And I've talked about it with D'Angelo Williams a lot this year, that, like, volume and his overall, like, role in that offense was a better indicator than like if he had a bad matchup. We saw it like against the Ravens, you know,
right.
The Steelers theoretically were going to attack through the air, but Williams had 150 total yards, I think, and probably I think more than that, 6 catches and 2 touchdowns. So, and I think I learned the lesson the hard way with Tim Hightower yesterday. And I am literally ranting right now. I'm not getting to my point.
It's fine. He'll get there.
Like, Dave Feldman, our social media guy, came over and talked to us on Sunday, and he asked us Kristen Michael or Tim Hightower. And I said Kristen Michael because I was just obsessed with the upside and the matchup against the Rams. That was my big thing there. I was like, it's a better matchup against the Rams. Jaguars allow 3.5 yards per carry coming into week 16. But in my head, like, this thing that I've been thinking all along was that Hightower was the better play because, A, his team was projected to win by pretty much anybody out there. Like, if as long as Drew Brees was playing, they were at home, they were going to win.
Yeah.
Like, a team that's going to win, most likely, and they're at home, that's a huge correlation to running back success. And, like, we knew Hightower was going to get the volume. Like, we heard on Sunday they were going to bench CJ Spiller. He was going to be a healthy scratch. Or, well, they said he's not healthy, but whatever. We know that he is. They just didn't want to play him.
Thanks, Saints.
So, like, if you have a running back like a Tim Hightower, who's, you know, not an all-star player, but he's also, like, he's fresh and he's playing pretty well lately, and they're going to get a ton of volume, and they're in, like, a favorable spot, not necessarily the matchup. Like I said, the Jags have a tough run defense, but we knew the game was going to flow, like, be a positive game script for running backs if the Saints got a lead, which they did, and they were at home. I think, like, those three things are far better indicators to running back success than a matchup.
Game script.
So game script.
Being at home.
Game script and volume are just so much more favorable. And we even, like, I learned that lesson the hard way with Tim Hightower 3 weeks ago against the Bucks, where they had – where it was a bad matchup again. The Bucks have, like, had a top five Football Outsiders DVOA run defense pretty much the whole year. But Hightower got 27 carries.
Yeah.
He scored a touchdown and had 90 yards. So, again, that's, like, the same thing. If the team – like, the and the Bucks and Saints are probably, like, equal-level teams, but – again, like, game script and volume. Like, those should be the things that we look – those should be the box that we check off first when we're talking about running backs. And matchup should be, like – and I know we all – like, everybody's got a great, like, you know, some sort of system to determine matchups, whether it's fantasy points against or, you know, whatever your system is.
Efficiency, yards per carry, whatever. Yeah,
exactly. But I just think that we should look at those two things, like, especially in DFS, one-week sort of situation. Those should be the things we look at first. And like I said, I learned that with D'Angelo Williams, Devonta Freeman, Charcandrick West, and then I just
threw it all out the window.
I screwed the pooch again with Tim Hightower this week. I still started him in a championship game, but I felt bad that I had advised people to sit him pretty much all over the place.
There are certainly cases for and against that. Like, Devonta Freeman was one of the ones we should have picked up on that earlier when he was getting all of the volume and was in pretty favorable game scripts early on during his torrid pace where he scored, what was it, 9-10 touchdowns in like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, outside the matchups, they were all good spots for him to perform well, and he did perform well with a massive amount of volume. On the flip side, there are situations like the Melvin Gordon case. Granted, he wasn't playing as good a football as some of these other guys, but like he had good volume in positive spots for that offense, but just pfft.
Yeah, but did San Diego like ever have a good game script, you know? Like that's the team, yeah. Like you can't really trust a bad football team like
right.
that has bad there are certainly
bad.
Yeah, and their offensive line especially, that's the big thing.
And I mean, there were cases too where with even that Jags offense where like TJ Yeldon had positive game scripts going his way, but like, he just didn't get the touchdowns. So
for sure. Well, the Jags are weird. Like I think Blake Bortles like recently has like a ridiculous amount of red zone attempts. Like they just keep chucking it.
Or gave it to Denard Robinson. Or,
yeah, that one Titans game was painful. And that's a funny thing too, that like again, coming back to this lesson, like this lesson that I learned, like with Denard Robinson, I kept saying like, yeah, Denard Robinson better play than Tim Hightower this week, but what in my mind and all of our minds like made Denard Robinson such a good play when TJ Yeldon was not getting those like red zone touches or getting in the favorable spots,
right?
Just because I don't know, it seems like sometimes I know that I get obsessed with like a talented guy that's coming into a favorable spot and like overrate him more than even the starter.
Yeah,
a sleeper.
Yeah, exactly. Secret sleeper.
All right. Good rant. It'll definitely be something. That was something I wanted to look at, too, is kind of like, and with those matchups, what guys work, like if we were just looking at a matchup base, what guys consistently beat it, too, and whether it was volume or their own talent or offense and stuff
yeah,
like that.
And along, I don't want to use the Giants' backfield as an example, but in week 15 against the Panthers, Rashad Jennings had 16 carries for 107 yards and a touchdown, and Shane Vereen scored in that game, too. And nobody probably started the Giants' running backs that game, but it was a 38-35 game. And, you know, that was a horrible matchup on paper, and both those dudes came through, so.
Yeah, there were other indicators that could have pointed towards somebody having success in that game.
Yeah, that's the that's just the thing with running backs. Like, it's just more about feeding them and getting them into a rhythm, like,
yeah.
More than what the yards per carry allowed is, or fantasy points against, you know, I think it's just something we definitely have to look at going forward.
Yeah.
Franchise, what have you learned, if anything, from this year?
The big thing I learned this year, and this is the first season that I drafted this way, but in pretty much all my leagues, I went wide receivers for the first, like, 4 or 5 rounds. And when everyone's obsessed with getting that feature running back because there's only, like, 5 of them left in the league or whatever, the Adrian Petersons and whatnot.
One of them was Eddie Lacy.
The number of first-round guys that busted or got hurt, like Lev Bell and Jamal Charles. Like, all these wide receivers that you could scoop up in the first 4 rounds, like, well, Dez Bryant and Calvin Johnson were busts, but you got Julio Jones, you got Antonio Bryant, guys like that, and then I think I scooped, like, I don't know, Jordan Matthews is a bad example. Jeremy Maclin had a decent year. Odell Beckham was a first or second round pick. But you can scoop these guys while everyone's obsessed with getting those running backs who are just going to either get injured or get their job taken by someone else behind them at some point in the season. And you can scoop other running backs later in the draft. Like, I got Doug Martin, I think, in the 6th round. Chris Ivory was lasting until the 8th or 9th round. And both of those dudes helped me get at least to the fantasy playoffs with the talent I had at wide receiver that I got early while everyone else was getting these guys who ended up getting injured and they couldn't use later in the year. And I think going forward, especially the way this year played out, wide receivers are going to be the big thing in the first round next year.
That was something that was funny. There was a lot of discussion, and, you know, the traditionalists and fantasy football purists, a lot of people were pushing Gronk into the first round. A lot of people were pushing Antonio Brown higher up in the first round, Julio and stuff. And some of the football purists, you know, didn't want to do that. They wanted to get their running back in the first round and stuff. But I think you're right. I think zero RB has become kind of a more, hipper trend the last couple years. And it certainly has its faults, but it can work out. But I think, you know, one of the adages is you know, you can't win your league in the first round, but you can lose it, sort of thing. Or maybe I have that backwards. I don't remember. It's early.
You can't win your league in the first round, with your first pick, but you can lose it. Which is BS.
Yeah, it's kind of silly. But I think what a lot of people might be shifting towards is trying to get players that have a bit of a safer production, because running back is so, I mean, not to say wide receiver is volatile, but running back is crazy. Guys like Antonio Brown and Gronk will probably be bigger staples of the first round this year than in years past. I would have to agree with that. Maybe Julio Jones too.
Exactly. So, and like, if you're going wide receiver the first four or five rounds, you can get number one wide receivers on several different teams, and you're scooping up all that talent while other people, you know, you're keeping those guys from the rest of your league mates, and you're getting them all on your team, especially like if you're in a deeper PPR league where you might play with a couple flexes, like. And then even later, like getting a guy like Amari Cooper or this year Allen Robinson, who's not going to last very long next year.
No.
You know, like guys like that, scoop them up. Scoop them up in the first couple rounds and then find your running backs later. That's what I learned.
My question to you is, and in general, like you mentioned zero running back is becoming more hipper, and I definitely think more people will try to do it as the running back position was such a dumpster fire this year.
Yeah.
Is that going to create like – favorable situations to people that are targeting running backs early, like, because the whole idea behind zero running back and, you know, do the opposite or upside down drafting, as other people have called it, it was that you were zigging when other people were zagging,
right?
So now is it going to be kind of the other way where you want to zag when other people zig, and like you go running back heavy, you end up plucking off all these values, that sort of thing? Because that could create an interesting situation too, by just being like, that's what made, like I said, that's what made zero running back so popular, was you were being the contrarian, you were getting these wide
right.
receiver values.
Yeah.
Now it might start to shift the other way.
What I mean, that's a fair point, but like, let's talk about this for a second. Which running backs do you actually feel comfortable about taking in the first round next year?
First round, I mean,
David Johnson.
I don't know though, because look what happened to Jeremy Hill and C.J. Anderson, and they were rookies last year. And
Anderson wasn't a rookie last year, right?
No, he wasn't a rookie, but he was a second-year player. It was his first shot.
Yeah, and I feel like people will jump for guys like David Johnson, but when a guy's not proven like that, like a guy like Adrian Peterson or Lev Bell, who've done it for years and, you know, several years in a row, I think people fall into that trap of getting the guy who was hot last year and like, oh, he's going to explode this
Man,
year.
But that upside with David Johnson is so huge.
Like, if Chris Johnson doesn't come back to that team,
I feel
like
a lot better about
him. He'll be like a 20-touch guy a game again. I mean, like, and I get it. I get the hesitation with but I like to be the type of fantasy player that I don't like to let, like, draft busts of the past.
Right.
Like,
yeah, don't operate
me.
Don't operate in fear.
Yeah. Right. And there are reasons that Hill busted because like he wasn't proven. Well, I guess that one kind of is a good example, because he just stunk this year. Like,
yeah.
He was just played bad.
He just looked like a different running back.
Yeah, which is, like, that's hard to predict. But, like, with CJ, and again, here I'm caping up for CJ again, but, like, like he got injured. Just from the start, I mean, in training camp and all that, he was the guy in preseason. He was the guy. And then he got hurt, and it just threw everything off course. And certainly that can happen to David Johnson, but that could happen to any running back.
Right,
right.
I mean, it might be a little crazy to say he's a first-round pick, but, like, I mean, this last stretch has sold me. I mean,
he's been incredible, yeah.
And I mean, I liked him coming into this year. I held him in like two leagues, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know. In that offense too, I mean, that's the big thing. Denver's offense fell apart. Cincinnati's offense became less run heavy. Like, this is one of the best offenses in the league, and I think that Carson Palmer and all those guys, they're going to Floyd is the only one that might not be back next year, but either way, it's still going to be one of the league's best offenses, and having the running back attached to that is pretty tempting. I don't know. But other guys too.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell is, I think, will still go in the first round even with the injury.
Yeah.
Adrian
Peterson will go in the first round until he's dead.
You think Devonta Freeman is a first round guy?
I wouldn't touch him.
Not a chance.
Like, no.
Not for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, we just talked about volume. Like, that's really what's been keeping him afloat lately.
And that's
the volume.
That's a huge question mark. Is, I mean, Tevin Coleman has not looked as good, but this regime invested, what, a third-round pick in him last year, so they might try to get him more involved. Freeman's going to be entering. Is Freeman entering a contract year next year?
I think so.
I think, or no. This was only his second year, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
This was his second year, so he's one away from a contract year. But, I mean, other guys like Matt Forte is probably going to be on a new team. Arian Foster's coming back from yet another injury.
Yeah, he's getting up there in age, too.
Doug Martin, depending on his situation.
He's a free agent, too. He might go to another team.
Lamar Miller's going to be a free agent. I mean, if we look at, like, on the season, the top running backs goes Freeman, Peterson, D'Angelo Williams, Doug Martin, Todd Gurley, Lamar Miller, David Johnson, and Chris Ivory. What does that put me at? 8? Latavius Murray, Danny Woodhead are your top 10 scorers.
That's so gross.
But, I mean, guys that got injured, Mark Ingram got injured and is on IR. We already mentioned, well, Lev Bell.
You could basically just say
Jamal Charles.
D'Angelo Williams is Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Sean McCoy might be like a late first rounder.
I would be shocked if people go that far. I mean,
I couldn't
he was
it.
Getting hurt every which way this year.
Yeah, when he's in there.
Jamal Charles would be the only other one I might scoop for in the first round, but he's coming off another big injury, so I might feel better about waiting a little bit on him.
Isn't it interesting that the Chiefs kind of like got better when Jamal Charles
It's insane. Down? It's insane.
I like sometimes I wonder if I don't know. No, because that kind of goes against my theory of just – never mind. Take it back.
Same thing kind of happened with the Seahawks when Lynch went out. They kind of changed their offense.
They got a healthier, more explosive runner in there. So,
yeah, if Thomas Rawls hadn't gotten hurt and he had kept on a torrid pace, and because I don't think Lynch is going to be back there next year.
No.
He would have been a guy that people were thinking about in the first round, too.
He'll be a guy.
Rawls is a sick dynasty guy to just have stashed.
Mm-hmm. I'm so mad I let him go in our league.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I had him in the preseason, and I was like, this is going to be great. And then, like, when they kept everybody else, I was like, I need some room on the roster. I should have held on to him. That was my mistake.
And there will probably be some rookies, too. Like, a rookie won't be a first-round pick, but just when you're talking about people that that go through, you know, they come through the draft and end up in pretty good spots. Ezekiel Elliott is already declared from the draft, Ohio State running back.
Right.
He's probably going to be pushed for a first-round pick. There are some other rookies that could come and
make do we know if like Chubb's coming yet or is he too young?
I don't know. He had the injury,
right?
I don't think he'll come out after that.
And Henry should be coming in and
Henry will come in.
McCaffrey's going to be interesting depending on where he lands.
He's an underclassman.
Oh, he's an underclassman. You're right. Yeah. All right. Well, anyways, that's for a different podcast once everybody declares. But let's Daily Dap and get out of here.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hook. Give me daps because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps.
All right, it's Daily Daps time, the segment where we give daps, not exactly on a daily basis, but to things in pop culture, the world, society, whatever you want to call it, that we have liked this week. So who wants to go first? Who's got one?
I got one.
All right, franchise. Hit it up.
The holiday season, a lot of people travel. I just want to give daps to all the people that work in the travel industry. You know,
hey, man, that was my dap from like a week ago.
Was it?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't listen to that one. But I'm going to reiterate.
No, it's still
a
good one.
I'm sure a lot of people had family and close friends traveling and just making sure everyone gets through everywhere safely and on time and all that stuff. It's very important. So daps to everyone that works.
Definitely.
In travel this time of year especially.
It's a good one to dap. Harmon, what are you dapping this week?
Yeah, I'm dapping a good friend of mine who's going to be in town today actually after I do this podcast and go to the because this is my day off where I'm wearing the headband in case anybody wanted to know. So after this I'm gonna go work out and then meet up with a friend of mine who's in the LA area today. His name is Sal Stefanelli. He was one of the first people that ever gave me a shot as a writer when I first started back in the fall of 2013. He found me on Twitter, liked some of my work, and when he started kind of a small time site, he gave me a shot and really was one of the first people that ever like shared my work and encouraged me. He's not in the game anymore. I think he might be coming back, which is great. If you should follow him on Twitter at 2QBFFB. Great mentor to me and one of the reasons that I'm here today. So I'm gonna give him my daily dap. I'm really looking forward to actually meeting him in person for the first time today.
Nice.
Cool.
All right, I am going to give a daily dap to Tom Matsaranis. He is the senior editor for SI Now. He's a good follow on Twitter, but he, like a week or so ago, right before Christmas, had posted just a Twitter image. I'm terrible at finding new music. I mean, you guys know what I listen to on Spotify sometimes is kind of embarrassing.
Hoobastank.
I don't listen to them on Spotify. I do own three Hoobastank albums, and I did buy them of Sound Mind and Able Body when I was younger and have not gotten rid of them. That's for a different podcast.
All right,
burn them.
Anyways, Tom had posted his top 50 albums of the year, and it's got some different things I haven't listened to yet. So there were a couple that I listened to yesterday on Spotify. The album Joy Departed from Sorority Noise was a pretty good listen. It was in his top five. And then let's see, which one was it? It was The World is a Beautiful Place and I'm No Longer Afraid to Die had the album Harmlessness. So those were two good ones that I listened to. You can find him on Twitter at TheMantz, M-A-N-T-Z, and you can scroll back through his timeline to find that list. But it's a pretty solid list, and as somebody who has trouble finding music aside from things that franchise or others tell me, it was a good place for me to start trying to find some new people to listen to in 2016. So
nice.
Daily Dap to Tom Mantzoranis. Apologize if I butchered your name on the podcast. But that should do it for us here on the Fantasy Live podcast. Interesting one with just the youngsters here. But for
I'm
Alex
old.
Gelhar,
yeah,
Pat Harmon,
old.
And Matt Franciscovich, we will see you next week. Happy New Year.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here with Move the Sticks. Bucky, tell everybody what's coming up on this week's episode.
We're going to take a look at some of the contenders and see if we're confident or concerned as they head down the stretch. Also, what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. And finally, Coach Billick calls in. We discuss some of the coaches on the hot seat.
A lot of ground to cover on this week's Move the Sticks. Check it out, NFL.com/podcast or iTunes, or why not check out the video on YouTube.